Hey there, welcome to Public Health Podcast, helping you sift through healthcare topics and the news so you can ignore the schmelty and stay healthy. This is Healthy Schmelty. I'm Rishi B., career healthcare information specialist and also a master's of public health. Those are the qualifications necessary to determine when something is healthy or schmelty, if you'll believe it. In this episode, got a couple of things coming up. We're going to be starting with some fascinating reads, and I got two fascinating reads to share with all of you. The first is a hot topic that was hot a while ago, but you'd think it would get resolved. Like, maybe there's some studies on this by now, but no, it's still hot. Face masks in schools. We're going to be talking about what the data shows as far as how effective face masks are in general, and also what should we be doing for the kids at schools? Should they be wearing masks? We'll get into that. And also, how was the seatbelt campaign successful? You know, this public health pandemic here with COVID, you know, it's highlighted a lot of issues with the public health system in communicating how different things that combat viruses, how they're helpful. And, you know, adoption, widespread adoption seems to be something that's really hard for America's public health and just public health systems throughout the world to attain. So, but seatbelts, I mean, we're all wearing our seatbelts now for the most part. How was the seatbelt campaign so successful? So we'll touch on that in a bit. Later on, I'm going to be talking to Alex Albisu. He joined the podcast as the author of the free book, The New Dad Checklist. Alex Albisu has been on a couple of times on Healthy Schmelty. However, I wanted to give a shout out to this book that he wrote, a completely free ebook. The New Dad Checklist is exactly what it implies. It's how to be a good, supportive, non-birthing partner during, you know, when for his case and for my case, when your wife is about to give birth, how can I be supportive as a dad? So he talks about in the book getting past that mental shock so you can be a supportive non-birthing partner. And also we talk about how OB nurses are saints on earth. But first, how is everyone doing? How's the last couple of weeks been? You know, I've been kind of on a hiatus from the podcast for a while, and I'll be turning that around. You know, just so much going on with having a 10-month daughter, but also just lots of different things happening in my life. Got a new job, just a lot of things going on. A lot of things going on for the country as well, for America. Last time I checked, so this is about a month or so ago, 55% of America was fully vaccinated. I checked just now, and that's 55.7% of America is fully vaccinated. So take that, COVID. 0.7%. Booyah. 64% has received at least one dose. And these numbers are a little under, you know, difficult to get the exact time frame of, but, yeah. You know, Delta cases are going down, so that's encouraging signs. And it does seem as though a lot more people are signing up to at least receive that first dose. So this is all positive news, except not quite as positive as maybe some of us who have unvaccinated children would hope that these numbers would move. If you want to see how your county is doing, how your state's doing, there's a great website, COVID Act Now, that breaks down not only COVID cases, but also these vaccination rates. But let's get into the first fascinating read. Let's get into it. All right, that was Heaven by musician Sarab Kubawat. So make sure you check that out at a music streaming service nearest you. But let's get into that first fascinating read.
Fascinating.
That first fascinating read is from Harvard, Back to School Pandemic Toolbox for Parents and Caregivers. So this is a toolbox of digital resources for parents on information on how to make sure that your kids, if they're going back to school, how they could stay safe. And I know the school season has been going on for some time now for most parents, but you know, it does seem as though the political aggressions around kids and how much COVID restrictions we should be making them go through and what parents should be doing never really seem like that ever reached a kind of a settling point. So I wanted to make sure I highlight this work that has been done by Syra Madad and Uzma Syed. Those are two doctors, and they're also both infectious disease experts who they show up on Fox News quite a bit. Syra Madad, if that name might ring a bell, she's someone that I kind of jokingly say is one of the winners of the COVID pandemic. And by that, I mean there are a handful of health experts, infectious disease epidemiology experts who, you know, the government can only do so much, it seems like, as far as making sure that it's a voice, a clarion voice that rings out through the noise to give as trustful of information as possible. But it really does seem like people in the community have to do, their part in kind of, blasting out and repeating those messages. Syra Madad is one of these people who is a trusted source for me. And for a lot of other people, she was actually featured in a Netflix documentary called Pandemic, which is a great series. You wouldn't think it's great because we're all living in a pandemic, but that is a great pandemic. But anyways, Syra Madad and Uzma Syed, two doctors, they put together for Harvard this back-to-school pandemic toolbox, and I'll have the link to that in the show notes for this episode at rishibi.com. And what that is essentially telling parents to take any precaution that you can until kids can get vaccinated, which there seems to be a lot of movement on that. It does seem like kids 5 and up is probably going to start happening pretty soon. Pfizer just is in process of submitting an EUA at this point, October 4th of 2021. They also have some other tips for parents, though, that fall under taking a precaution. Ensuring your teacher is vaccinated. Be prepared for frequent testing of your child or children at home in case something comes out that they may have been exposed to someone with COVID. Or maybe they're just feeling sick or have been around someone who's feeling sick, regardless of COVID or not, some other type of affliction. Because the Delta variant is quite tricky. It's quite good at posing as a cold or a flu or something like that. So if someone's feeling sick, make sure you keep the kid at home. And once again, be prepared for frequent testing. But the advice that seems to be getting a lot of ire from some people is make sure that your children are wearing a high quality mask. And to highlight some of the ire that's been kind of vocalized, this is a clip from the Megyn Kelly show where she's speaking with a reporter for the New Yorker magazine named David Zwig, who put together what the science shows about masks in schools. Once again, this is David Zwig on the Megyn Kelly Show.
All the studies that you point this out in your piece that have taken a look at masks outside of this massive one, they just sort of tick them off as one of many things that were part of the preventative measures in the school and then say, these are the effective mitigation measures. But that's like me saying, okay, in order to prevent the measles, I wore a coat, I wore mittens, I used hand sanitizer. Oh, and I got vaccinated for measles. Like, and then we just require all children everywhere to wear the coats and use the hand sanitizer. You know, it's like, that's not how science is supposed to be conducted in figuring out what is an effective mitigation measure.
Right. So I talk about this in the article, and you raise a very important point, which is the CDC has continued to recommend what they call a layered approach, where you're doing a whole variety of things with ventilation, with masking, with, you know, this, that, and the other thing. And HEPA filters and, you know, the list goes on.
Plexiglass, social distancing.
All of it. Yeah. And hand hygiene and to what degree each of these individual interventions are beneficial, you can't tell if you're doing them all at the same time. There's no way to differentiate and know. So if you're...
All right. So that once again was a journalist, David Zwig, who put together an article that I'll have linked at the show notes for this episode at rishibi.com. The name of his article for the New Yorker magazine is What the Science Shows About Masks in Schools, which, as he was talking about on the Megyn Kelly show, he was saying is inconclusive. What they're referring to is the CDC guidelines, which I'm sure you know, involve, especially if you're a parent, I'm sure you know, involve screening, testing, improved ventilation, hand washing, and quarantining for kids to go back to school and also all staff. But they say that all students 2 and older should be wearing masks. Before we get into masks in schools, it's not quite as inconclusive as David Zwig is making it work out to be here. But first, I thought I'd take a step back. And how do we know that face masks work at all? Some of you probably know that kind of infamously Dr. Fauci towards the beginning of the pandemic, and not just Dr. Fauci, but many other public health experts, were a little 50-50 wishy-washy about whether or not we should all be wearing face masks. Up to recently, masks and all other non-medical interventions, like social distancing, they've been grouped together as being important to fight back against COVID, and not just COVID, but any disease outbreak like this. You want to do all those measures is how face masks have kind of been bucketed. Face masks themselves, which, you know, might be surprising, up until very recently, I'm recording this once again on October 4th, 2021. Up until very recently, the evidence on face masks themselves hasn't been very conclusive. However, there was a large study that was done in Bangladesh throughout the course of the first year or so of the pandemic in 2020. And so this test of the face mask involved 340,000 people who were regularly tested across 600 districts in Bangladesh. And I'll have a link to this in the show notes, but essentially what the study revealed is that communities that wore face masks of any kind had 10% less cases. And we were talking about daily case rates up into the thousands. 10% is quite a bit. So it's also probably an underestimate because the test only identified people who had symptomatic cases. And as we know, COVID is quite effective with asymptomatic cases as well. All right, so that's face masks in general. We know that those work. How do we know face masks work in schools, though? There's now multiple studies in America showing that spread is lower in school districts that enforce mask mandates. As we're probably all quite aware that the decision on whether or not to wear face masks has largely been left up to the individual school districts. So in Ohio, in Cincinnati, they did a study there. There is a large hospital that did a public health study that found that in districts that have mask mandates, the rate of students diagnosed with COVID was 78% higher than in non-mandated districts. And the rate of students getting quarantined was also 60% higher. So, you know, having those masks really significantly reduce the chance of having to do some type of issue with COVID. That's also reflected in North Carolina that did a study of 100 school districts, and that included about 1 million students and 160,000 staff members. And in schools with mandates, 1 in 3,000 students got COVID while those mask mandates were active. There was also a similar study that shows similar observations in Alabama as well. So this is just three that I selected for the purposes of this podcast episode. There are multiple studies now throughout the country showing that masks work in schools. But as to whether or not face masks themselves. I will concede that to David Zwig there from the Megyn Kelly show that face masks in schools, whether or not that those work themselves, there is no large scale study like the Bangladesh one that I talked about. However, you know, the Bangladesh study talked about face masks in general. And, you know, this David Zwig article is now frequently quoted. As I was researching this story, I saw that David Zwig's name pops up quite a bit. However, you know, one of the things that he says in his article, and this is a quote, is many of America's peer nations around the world, including the UK, Ireland, all of Scandinavia, France, the Netherlands, Switzerland, and Italy, have exempted kids with varying age cutoffs from wearing masks in schoolrooms. And the point being that they did that, they still didn't have any significant rise in cases. However, in almost every single one of those countries, except for one, they're at or near 70% fully vaccinated rates versus the 55% for America. So I think that trying to compare America to some of these other nations across the world isn't quite apples to apples. But, you know, to be fair, there is no study like the Bangladesh one that identifies how effective face masks are in schools. Just the studies that I talked about earlier about the impact that mask mandates have for school districts versus the ones that don't have those mask mandates. So in one way, you could say that the data is inconclusive. In another way, you could say that it's all but conclusive. We're waiting for a study that says that face masks are good for schools, but we essentially have that. So what can parents do while these, you know, while all these nerds battle over these studies and what all these studies means? This goes back to the article for this fascinating read segment, the Harvard Back to School Pandemic Toolbox for Parents and Caregivers. Take every precaution possible, including face masks, if you're a parent with kids going back to school. There's really no argument for not wearing a face mask. All these arguments thus far are for having to wear a face mask, which segues nicely to the next fascinating read.
Fascinating.
Following is a clip from NBC Nightly News. Let's take a listen.
It is a new seatbelt ordinance. If the town council gets its way, seatbelts will be mandatory for everybody riding in the front seat of a car through Richland.
I'll have to detour the town to get to Kalamazoo. They pass a seatbelt ordinance, but I don't use a seatbelt.
I wouldn't wear my seatbelt. If I get caught, I get caught, I guess.
Florida Highway Patrol Lieutenant Chris Miller hears it all when it comes to seatbelts.
I hear it's uncomfortable. It wrinkles my clothes. It's not cool.
There's no freedom no more. You don't want to wear it? That's your choice.
Yeah, so that was a NBC Nightly News clip from 1984, courtesy of a segment from The Daily Show that I saw. So, you know, you can probably see where I'm going with this theme on how exactly did seatbelt laws take effect when the people that are saying all these things regarding seatbelt laws at the time are saying some of the same things that we're hearing now about mask mandates, about vaccine mandates. For example, just as another example, there's a quote from someone, I just hate them. I think I hate them because you have to wear them. And I think it's more of a, you got to wear it, so I don't want it. You know, that kind of sentiment is kind of the common thing that they found in 1984 as seatbelt ordinance laws were starting to take effect throughout the country. Some people don't even really have an opinion on the science necessarily. They just object to having the government tell them what to do. And so, yeah, this is exactly what was going on at the time in 1984, heading into 1985 when these ordinance laws were taking place. There were surveys done that found that 86% of Americans recognize that seatbelts save lives, while only 41% of those people actually use them. And 65% of Americans who were against these mandatory belts, their top issue was comfort. And this article from the BBC, this kind of goes over how exactly the seatbelt laws got chosen. There was some interesting stuff where there was a debate between the government, the police, and auto manufacturers whether the ordinance should be for seatbelts or airbags. I'm going to skip over that, but it is very interesting. But, you know, all these people are saying all these things, and it sounds a lot like what we're hearing now for, you know, COVID pandemic measures. But we're all wearing seatbelts now. So what happened? And the key thing there is that the objection isn't to the science, it's just to the laws that are enforcing it. And this is kind of the same thing we're seeing now. But for seatbelts, you know, people felt and saw the changes in traffic fatalities when people started wearing seatbelts. In a 2003 study, there was estimates that there's 136 lives saved annually for every 1% of seatbelt compliance. So the lesson being, although there's protests, most people just eventually comply. For example, in New York City, it was the first state to mandate in 1985 seatbelts, and they had a lot of protests and non-compliance. However, 2 months later, 70% of front seat drivers and passengers were complying. So despite the protests of a vocal minority, attitudes to face masks are changing, as evidence shows that interventions do make a difference. Over time, adoption will continue to increase, just as it happened with seatbelts. That was a public health expert talking in a article. That was a quote from a public health expert. So rounding out this topic, some trivia. New Hampshire to this day still doesn't have a seatbelt law. America hit 90% seatbelt compliance in 2016. And Japan didn't start enforcing their seatbelt law that they made in 1970 until 2008. So kind of crazy, right? You know, probably most of us are wearing seatbelts. If you're listening to this, you're probably a regular seatbelt wearer. But, you know, America's still at 90% or so. And, you know, a vocal minority being loud, this is kind of highlighted by a video that I saw from a related article from the Washington Post. This is a video of former presidential candidate Gary Johnson in 2012. He was, if you don't remember, Gary Johnson was representing the Libertarian Party. However, I didn't remember this at all. There was a Libertarian Party presidential candidate debate, and Gary Johnson got booed for supporting driver's licenses.
Should someone have to have a government-issued license to drive a car?
Hell no!
What's next, requiring a license to make toast in your own damn toaster?
The license to drive? You know, I'd like to see some competency exhibited by people before they drive.
More Healthy Schmelty in just a moment. We're going to be talking with the author of the free ebook, The New Dad Checklist. Okay, so in a moment, we'll be talking with Alex Albisu. But first, just a quick note to follow me on all social medias, please, for quick, nutritious health news bites in between podcast episodes. I'm Rishi B on Twitter and also on Instagram. And you can also find the Healthy Schmelty Facebook page. And I appreciate your support for the podcast. Subscribe, review, leave a comment for the show at rishib.com. And make sure you check previous episodes, such as recommendation for media literacy, making sure that you're getting the most nutritious news, politics news, and just news of any kind That was an interesting conversation. But let's get into my conversation now with Alex Albisu, author of the New Dad Checklist, which is a free ebook. And I'll have the link to at the show notes for this episode. We're going to be talking about how, you know, one thing for me that I kind of found out, if you don't know, I have a 10-month-old daughter, and that's my first child. And one thing that kind of surprised me is just how little is required from adults, or not adults, I guess, in some cases, but just how little is required from people before having a baby. You just kind of go to the doctor and that's it. you know, books and parent video streamers were kind of the best resource for my wife and I in preparing for our child. And wouldn't you know it, Alex Albisu, he does those both. He has his book and he regularly makes parent-related videos on his social medias. So let's get into that conversation now. We're going to be talking about how to be the best supportive non-birthing partner you can be. Here's Alex.
Sure, this is a big responsibility, no doubt about it, but you are fully capable and will do a great job. Want to know how I know? It's because you care. You cared enough to read this to find better ways to prepare for your child coming into this world. You cared enough to want to find better ways to support your partner as you both become parents.
And that is the snippet from the New Dad Checklist by Alex Albisu, who's my guest. Alex, hello.
Oh, hi, Rishi. What's going on?
Oh, hi.
Oh, hi.
Yeah, dude, okay. How are you today?
I'm doing good, man. I'm living the life of a dad now having two kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is great.
Right. And so that's, and I'm a dad as well. Recent, I'm a fresh dad, as they call it on the streets.
Fresh dad. Fresh dad.
And so that's why I was so excited to see that you had written this free ebook, The New Dad Checklist. And so great that you could, that we could talk about this resource because, you know, talk about my fresh dadness. Once I found out that I was about to be a fresh dad, I was like, oh my God, am I allowed to be? Is like, oh my God, I'm just like some loser. Like,
like imposter syndrome comes. Who says exactly. I could be a dad?
What lessons? That,
yeah. You know,
what lessons do I have to impart? Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows? By the way, Fresh Dad is a new hygiene set of products that you and I should start.
Let's Fresh do it. Dad. Trademark now.
Smell like jean shorts or something. I don't know.
So, so the New Dad Checklist. Why don't we talk about what led you to making this book and probably introing your podcast as well, The Dad Chronicles?
Yeah, certainly. First of all, my name is Alex Albisu. Hello, everybody at home. I have a podcast called The Dad Chronicle. That's one of the shows that I do and that I'm a part of. And I started this show back in, oh my gosh, it's 2016. It's been a while.
Oh, wow.
When I found out that I was going to be a dad and I wanted to just chronicle and journey my experience leading up to that moment where my daughter was going to be born. And that was going to be it. But what I ended up finding was that there were a lot of people out there who listened to the show and resonated a lot with my story and ended up wanting to continue to listen in and be a part of that journey. And I found that I wanted to bring other dads onto the show, including Rishi. Rishi has been on.
Yep.
And we talk about that experience for those dads to tell their story, to bring inspiration and compassion to the conversation around fatherhood. And also I've taken it and created it to be really a resource for dads and parents, really, but, you know, kind of aimed at dads. And what it does is we have conversations around anything from, you know, the challenges around fertility to some of the toxic masculinity that is brought into, you know, conversations around fatherhood to, you know, how you raise your kids to childhood development, talking to not just dads about that, but also parenting experts so that dads can, you know, again, have a place, a central resource for those sorts of conversations. And when I was becoming a dad, what I noticed right away was actually a severe lack of resources for dads just to begin with.
Yeah.
And I found myself wanting some kind of a book or a checklist that would give me some clarity and direction on where it is that I needed to go next, and how I could prepare and be there for my wife. Well, here I am, you know, at this point in time, over 130 episodes into the Dad Chronicle, and that means over 130 conversations with dads and parenting experts. And I have a lot of good knowledge and understanding, so I made it myself. And to give it back to the community of parents out there, I decided to just make it free. And it gives you a good sense of how to be there for your spouse or your partner giving birth, how to prepare for your baby coming into the world, and even doing things after the fact, how you can be supportive of both your baby and your partner after birth. So it's been quite a journey. It's been very well received, and appreciate everybody who has read it and you know, provided comment on how it's helped them.
Yeah, yeah. You know, the first thing that struck me, Alex, as I was mentioning before, is like when I found out I was going to be a dad, my immediate thought was like, oh my gosh, me? And I like that you kind of reflect that right in the intro of the book, is like, calm down, it's going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And you were talking about like how you didn't see a lot of information out there for dads. That's something that kind of struck me too. And I remember the hospital that my daughter was born at, they're a research hospital, one of the top birthing hospitals, according to, I think, US News or something like that, top hospital to be birthed at in America, one of the top 10. Wow. And they gave some literature. And I remember them talking about a little bit about like how the non-birthing partner can experience some postpartum and stuff like that. And they're like, oh, this is like new research that's showing this, so we're including this in the book in this edition. And which is great that they're doing it now, but it's just kind of crazy to me that it took however long in modern medicine, you know, for them to realize that, hey, maybe the dad would appreciate some information and some like kind of helpful tips too, you know. It sounds like this is kind of a similar experience for you.
Yeah, it's an afterthought, right? And rightfully so, by the way. I don't want to claim that we're, you know, some martyr. Yeah. Oh, woe is us. But we know, we had the fun of that whole experience. And then our spouse or our partner, you know, my wife in my case, you know, got to do all the work. But there is some psychological stuff that comes down the line, right? And that's something that people are starting to become understanding and empathetic to. And that's what's great about resources like what I'm making and other stuff that's coming out. You know, I'm not the only one doing this, but I do like to think that the perspectives and the conversations I'm bringing to the table help highlight and tackle the issues, kind of what you're stating, that, you know, the dad doesn't necessarily need to be the afterthought in this case, right? There's plenty of opportunity for the dads to be given and empowered to better support not just their partners but themselves in some of those cases, like you're talking about, you know, that postpartum time. There's a little bit of sadness that can come along with, you know, your baby's born, overwhelmed, what do I do now, to even, you know, kind of the situation that I'm in where I'm looking to get a vasectomy, and there's some sense of, okay, that there's some permanence and some you know, coming to grips with what is going to happen, you know, next. That means that we're not going to have any more kids. There's something sad about that. There's something psychological to tackle there. Sure. So bringing those sorts of conversations to the table, I think is really important to the other side of a very complex and engaging story. And that is, you know, raising children, right?
Right, right. For sure. Yeah. And, you know, you kind of like get there pretty quickly about like how a dad, you know, you're in support mode. So if you were the barbarian in your D&D campaign, guess what, buddy? You now got to be the cleric.
And, or be that barbarian and throw some potions at your friends.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. But I know for myself, just speaking for myself, that was kind of a mental shift that I had to make, was like, oh man, you mean my life isn't all about me anymore, but I like me.
Right.
You know, that was kind of something that I had to go through. So I thought you reflected that really well. And, you know, it's a brief book. It's free, which is great. That's one thing that kind of something that I had to come to terms with as well is, you know, towards the last trimester and then, especially after the baby's born, how much of a hot commodity time is, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't got time to read like 300, 400 page books. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I really appreciated that you kept this pretty short, you know, and, kept it pretty like action driven, you know, like here's the topic and then here's some resources that might help you for that. Yeah, some of the different resources that you linked is, like a couple agencies that provide, like birthing classes and, mm-hmm. and things of that nature. One thing I thought was interesting, cause I wasn't able to do this because my baby was born, in the middle of COVID, unfortunately, but, you point out that having like a tour of the hospital of the birthing place is mm-hmm. Pretty helpful. Can you talk about that just because I personally haven't been able to do that and what value you found from that?
Yeah. Well, we ended up, so when Aria was born, before that, we were going through the motions of like, okay, kind of creating a checklist for ourselves. My wife is very much a planner. Okay. I'm not, which is another reason why a book like this is really helpful because it kind of gives me a way of like planning on my behalf. And one of the things that was suggested to us as we were going through the motions of like, hey, we're about to become parents and they were like, hey, you should go plot that course today. Like, know how you're getting from your house to the hospital, where you specifically need to go. Because what you're going to find is that, and this wasn't our case by any stretch because we had to induce both times. But uh-huh. just in case, hey, if you have to leave in the middle of the night and you got to figure out, first of all, like, not just how to get there, but how to, you know, find somebody to take care of your kid if you're having a second baby and call somebody so that you can get to the hospital. What route do you take? Where's the construction? Because here in DC where I live, there's construction everywhere. So you have to figure out where you're going.
Yeah.
And also in big hospital complexes like where my kids were born, you got to know like what floor you're going to, where are you parking? How do you check in? All that sort of stuff. And some of the logistics and planning ahead around those logistics just makes it so that you're not in when you're already in a very stressful situation that is, hey, we're about to have a kid. You're not necessarily you're mitigating any extra stress, I guess is what I should say.
Sure.
By doing that, by planning ahead. So doing that, you know, I find that doing that at the beginning of the third trimester is a really good practice because then it's in your head from, you know, towards that end of the pregnancy anyway. Don't do it too early because then you're going to forget. Do it closer to the time where you're about to give birth, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I'm a very visual learner. So like, so we had a doula who came and, which is so great. This person was like doulas such a saint. Great. Yeah. Cause, especially during our time, we couldn't really get a lot of support from the hospital, unfortunately, all the birthing classes and stuff like that. And, so that was awesome. And these nurses, you know, you kind of highlight that in your book too, mm-hmm. about trusting the nurses. Like I didn't realize until go time that like just how much these nurses were going to be a part of my life at that time. And they're just like saints on earth. Like seriously, yeah,
they really are.
Yeah. Yeah. They were just like so great. One thing I wanted to, sorry. Did you have a thought?
Oh, I was going
to
say, you know, just on that note, when we were having, when it was Jake, coming into this world and you guys can go back and listen to the episode where we introduce Jake, you know, over at thedadchronicle.com, there was a kind of a scare where we weren't sure if he was going to make it at one point. And just the presence of the nurses and what they did and how they supported both of us during that time, not just Deanna, but also me, because frankly, I had some shell shock from the situation. Now my boy's good. He's a little too good. He's 8 months old at the time of recording this, and he's wearing 2-year-old clothes. He's freaking huge.
Wow.
So he's fine. But at the same time, like at that moment, we were scared, and the nurses were incredibly supportive, and they're trained to handle those things. And when you're in a situation where especially a lot of men are very assertive and perhaps they want to be in the thick of it and trying to help where they can, which is fine, but also just trust in the doctors and the nurses who are there for your own sake as well as your partner's.
Yeah. And maybe aligned with that point, kind of the final thing I wanted to kind of talk about, you make a point about how like communication is really important between the dad and the mom, obviously. One thing I didn't really quite appreciate until my wife kind of just like really in plain black and white terms told me like, hey, guy, I got this thing inside of me that's coming out. So like if there's like big decisions that need to be made, might not be in like the mental space to like think a lot about that. So I'm going to need you to kind of have the presence of mind to do that. The communication, I see you kind of physically agreeing with this, but you want to talk a little bit about the role that the dad kind of has in that step of like communication, especially in the go time when the baby's about to blow at any second.
Yeah. First of all, like in any relationship, professional, personal, whatever, communication is the key to solving most things. Right. And I am a big believer in having very open, honest, direct communication. And what you have to do when you're planning ahead and you have, you know, a solid 8-9 months to plan for some of this and to have many conversations, but those conversations need to be coming from a place of love and understanding and empathy with your partner as you're planning for things like the birth. Communication is the key to making sure that all of the things line up. Setting expectations through that communication by understanding, hey, what do you need from me? How can I help you on that day? What can I do to help you push? You know, do you need me to hold a leg for you? What do you want me to just sit back and like let the nurses do their thing? Or, you know, like even when it comes to like the nursery, something that Deanna and I talked about as I was writing this book, because, you know, nesting is a thing for a lot of women who are about to give birth and they're thinking, okay, how do I want to set up this environment for my baby to thrive and to grow in? And for Deanna, she wanted me to be a big part of that. And I think that that's a great position to be in. Most women will want their partner to be a part of that. But, you know, I think we set some ground rules of like, you know, I just talked to her about, okay, I let her kind of take lead. What is it that you need from me? But in some cases, like you talked about, she was like, I just need you to make a call on this.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's fine. Right. And being flexible when she asks you to repaint that thing 3 times, Deanna, who definitely made me do that. Actually, to be honest, one of those times was because we found out that it was going to be a boy, not a girl. So that's fair. Ah. Just setting expectations and being flexible when you're setting those expectations with your partner, realizing that the partner giving birth definitely has the harder job here, and you're there to make it easier for them. And it's important to show a lot of grace in that. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that's such an important note. And like I said, that's probably one of the things that I really needed to come to terms with. But, you know, once I did, I kind of found that already being in that mental space kind of helped me slide into fatherhood once my beautiful baby girl came around.
Know, to your point earlier, a lot of it is being proactive with it. So don't be afraid to approach your wife about it or your spouse or your partner or whoever, because she might not be thinking to bring you into it. It's good for you to be proactive. And it's not like, hey, I need you to tell me what I can do to help. It's a conversation like, hey, you know, I've been thinking about how I can help with, you know, perhaps finding a crib, or I listened to an episode of the Dad Chronicle where Alex was talking about, you know, Deanna giving birth. I was thinking that I could help you push, you know, holding your leg. I wanted to talk about where it is that I can help or where you might need me, you know, approaching it collaboratively with some ideas in mind so that you can, you know, add some value and she sees that you're invested in that.
Yeah. Yeah. Another great point. You know, some of that stuff we did for my daughter, and now we're doing that now, you know, now that we're having to be team parents. And, you know, that's something that I wasn't really great at before. I didn't really expect like such a positive thing to kind of come about pre-fatherhood.
Yeah.
Segueing into fatherhood.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's communication. This communication thing you can practice before you have the baby, because guess what?
Yeah.
You got to do it all the time, including when the baby's born, believe it right. or not. And then as the baby's going off to college and you're still got a relationship to tend to. It's communication, man.
I don't want to think about it. I just wanted to say ma, like my daughter does right now. Ma.
It's the best, isn't it?
It's yeah, it's so good. Best thing that ever happened to me, for sure. To help you get into the best thing that ever happens to you, you can get the new dad checklist. Alex, you want to tell the folks at home where they can find that?
Yeah, head over to checklist.thedadchronicle.com. Again, that's checklist.thedadchronicle.com. No S at the end of chronicle. It's you know, singular. And you can download it for free there. And then if you want to listen to any of the episodes, actually, if you head over to thedadchronicle.com, there's an entire resource page there now. I ended up getting the site completely redone, and you can select different categories. You could search for people, so you can search for Rishi if you really want to see, you know, how an awesome, he's just such a good dad, and you want to hear about that. You can do that by heading over to thedadchronicle.com and listen to all the episodes and blog posts and videos and everything there.
That's awesome. Yeah. Alex does a lot of cool videos on YouTube for this as well. So yeah, Alex is nothing but dad content out there to help all you guys out there.
That's right.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Alex, for joining me to talk about your book.
Thank you. I appreciate the time.
All right. So that was my conversation with Alex Albisu. Make sure you find Alex Albisu. That's Albisu on Twitter, on Instagram. He's also starting to do lots of cool videos on TikTok. I'm not on TikTok, but he shares his TikTok videos on his other social medias. So he's a good follow. He's a good guy. Make sure you listen to his podcast, his dad-related podcast, The Dad Chronicles. And if you're into video games, listen to his podcast, Joystick and Mouse. And you can watch Alex Albisu stream video games regularly on his Twitch profile. Find article links for this episode at rishib.com. And I appreciate your subscriptions and support. A quick note that the podcast art is done by digital artist and just general artist Oddly Norman. And the music for Healthy Schmelty is done by the band Monster Rally. That's this episode of Healthy Schmelty. Hey there, listener. Make sure you stay healthy. Stay away from all that schmelty.
Ha ha ha. See you later.
See you later. See you later. See you later.